With UPS, future you graduates from Metro College with zero debt. How? As a package handler, you'll have a great job while you attend Metro College, and 100% of your tuition will be covered. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at UPS.
We are ESPN Louisville, your home for the college football playoff, NFL, the Final Four, and best sports talk. Download the ESPN Louisville app today. Delivered by UPS Jobs Kentucky.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
3167 for a chance to win weekly Visa gift cards from Class Act Federal Credit Union. So, again, Satterfield, it's like one of these deals in radio where, like, it's supposed to start any minute, so I don't know what to do, but I can just start on top. I'll tell you real quickly, and this is a UK take, and I know the Louisville audience here, we're going to get to Satterfield, but I've said a million times, 6-6 is the absolute worst-case scenario for them, and it would be considered a failure. Anything below, I mean, 5-7 is inconceivable. Not that they couldn't lose to Arkansas or Vanderbilt or whatever, but I mean, it would be the narrative they're trying to sell. A 5-7 season would mean they lose all credibility in anything they would say as a coaching staff going forward, pretty much for perpetuity. Like, I would just never believe them again on anything after all their offseason proclamations if they were to go 5-7. The question is 6-6. In my mind, that's still a failure. That's still a failure if you hold Kentucky to their own standards of what they're saying in the offseason. 6-6 is a failure. But that Lexington Herald leader, Josh Moore, is our new beat writer, said 6-6 would be a B season for Kentucky. No, it would not. No, it would not. At some point, and we understand all coaches lie, but at some point they have to be held accountable for what they say. And you can't say what the UK coaches have been saying about UK and go 6-6 against this schedule and try and claim it to be. A 6-6 is a D for Kentucky. Anything worse is an F. A 7-5, then you can start deciding how they got there, whether it's going to be a C or B or whatever. But Satterfield has finally arrived at the podium, so we'll get to that now. You're listening to Louisville Football Press Conference on ESPN Louisville.
All right, yeah, thank you guys for being here. I know we're still a week out from today, so we haven't exchanged depth charts as of today. I think that's going to happen probably in the next couple of days. So we really can't really talk about much about depth chart issues from either side, either team, us or them. Once we get that, obviously we'll put that out probably midweek, and then we'll probably know a little bit more about that. A couple of things for us. One thing, Jordan Davis, our tight end, he's got to miss the first two games. When we first got here, he was going to put on his own academic probation. He was going to miss four games, but then got enough hours to where they cut it back to two games. So he's going to have to miss the first two games. That's what kind of hurts our tight end room a little bit there. But he's been practicing, looking good, doing a lot of good things, and so he'll be back for our third game of the season. And then P.J. Blue is a player that he got hurt about a week ago, hurt his knee. We found out it's an ACL. So he'll be out for the rest of the season. He's had surgery and getting that thing back on the mend. So those are two things that we needed to put out there. I think overall coming out of camp, pretty healthy. PJ Blue was really the one that was that's out for the season. Everybody else will be back. A couple guys that are dinged, but they'll be back here in the next week or two. Malik's been back at practice. Came back, I think, three or four practices ago, and every day he's doing more and more and more, so he'll be back in the mix. Just looking at the rest of the team, but we're fairly healthy coming out of camp, even though it was a pretty physical camp, and, looking at the numbers of scrimmage plays that we had where we're actually tackling. I think that's a big issue when you start the season, is the tackling part. I think as you watch that Saturday night, watching the Florida-Miami game, wasn't great tackling out there. Both defenses flew around and were fast, but, you could see a lot of missed tackling, and I think that's just early in the season. I think that's what you're going to see from a lot of teams, just the way we practice now. And, you know, that's the one thing that you don't, that's the unknown, you know, is tackling. And then I think also the first games, you know, it's also the sloppiness of first games, I think, sometimes. You know, the NFL gets so many preseason games, and college we don't get that. You know, we have to scrimmage each other, and then all of a sudden you're coming out and you're playing a game, and you know, you don't look as sharp as you'd like to look. And as a coach, that's always something that, you know, you're shaking your head at, you know, with the false start penalties. I'm talking pre-snap penalties. And, you know, that's the one thing that we're trying to harp on so we can play a clean game. And, you know, taking care of the football and eliminating those pre-snap penalties, I think, is huge. Gives you a chance. And so it's very frustrating when that doesn't happen. But we're excited about, you know, heading into this week and, you know, getting ready to play Notre Dame. We'll open up with questions. Yeah. Well, you know, with the time that he's missed, Malik, you know, Juwan will start for us. And, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on how he does over the next couple of days. And but he's looking good. I mean, he's throwing the ball. He's doing a lot of things, you know, which with Malik, his strength is running. And so you want to be able to do that at 100%. And so we'll know more, a lot more by the end of the week with Malik as well. If not, he'll be there. Evan's gotten a ton of reps. That's what we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. The benefit of this thing for Evan is that he gets thrown in the fire throughout practice. And, you know, for a true freshman, that's always difficult. And he's done a great job with that, learning our offense and making all the reads and that type of thing. But, you know, he obviously never played in a game. But he obviously will be there and be available.
Kind of know with Jordan, obviously, it was something you guys knew and prepared. Mm-hmm.
It does. And, you know, Ian coming in, the Vandy transfer has really helped. He's been a great, you know, player for us at the Y position. You know, he's done some great things doing that throughout camp because he was kind of an unknown, you know, bringing him in. Jordan Ford's forward or tight end's done it. The H-back's done a great job there in the H-back position. But it does leave you thin at the Y position. And, you know, and that's something we've kind of been knowing about, so we've kind of, you know, ready for it, you know, and so we'll see how that goes as we move throughout the game. But obviously it'll be a great when we get him back. He's done some great things, very athletic, very great size, made a spectacular play on Saturday at practice in the red zone. You know, he does a lot of good things. And, you know, he's a guy that when we got here, people were like, you know, attitude, this or that, and that, you know, but he's been great. He's worked his tail off all offseason and, you know, for the opportunity, like I said, he got those extra hours he needed to eliminate the 4-game suspension just to get the 2. You know, and shoot, he's excited to try to get out there and have an opportunity to play his senior year.
Coach, you were a part of what's generally regarded as the biggest upset in contemporary college football. And I'm wondering if there's anything that you, in preparation for Notre Dame, that you can take and apply to the Cards opener against Notre Dame?
I think it was completely different scenarios in the fact that, you know, we were a team back then that just come off 2 national championships and we were, you know, rolling and really good football team, even though, you know, we're a lesser level. And, you know, I think that day we had 58 players on scholarship, but they were accustomed to winning and playing hard and all the things that, you know, so we're all new here. We have a new staff and everything's new. And so it's kind of hard to correlate that, I think. You know, the fact that, yeah, we're a big underdog and we're playing a, you know, well-known team that's coming in here, that I think that's the correlation, but it may stop right there. You know, we have not seen our guys play a game yet. You know, we don't know how they're going to go out and react in a game situation. You know, all our preparation that we've put in, you know, we've got a good idea, but you don't fully know until we put the ball down and let's snap the ball and see what happens. You know, and so I know this is a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity for our guys to go out and showcase what they've been working hard to do and to play. So we're, as coaches, are anxious to get out there, all right, see where we're at with everybody, and let's put this ball down. Let's play a game. I think anytime you go through a camp like this in an off season, you know, particularly with all the change that we've had with the coaching staff and then the kind of year that Louisville had last year, I mean, everybody's ready to step up and play a new season. Yep. No, I mean, not necessarily those games. It's just the way we practice and the way we prepare. Now, we had to talk about it last week in the middle of the week about how, you know, our chase teams, which we call them chase teams, which is our scout teams. I mean, our chase teams, because they're chasing the depth chart. We're always trying to develop those guys, and so I want them to go extremely hard on our chase teams, offense, defense, and our special teams there, trying to give a great look. We talk about how hard they got to practice, and I don't know how they've practiced in the past here. And so we had a ways to go with that. So in the middle of last week, we're like, listen, this is not good enough the way we're practicing. Once we got into those chase team looks, I'm saying prior to that, you know, we're just good on good. So everybody's going hard. But once you get into the chase team looks, now, you know, we're bringing guys that are, you know, freshmen or, you know, guys that just got here. Some, they're trying to give us a look. Well, we're having to coach those guys up. All right, here's what we need out of you guys. You got to go hard. You got to go as hard, if not harder, than what we're going to play on next Monday night. And so that's, we're really coaching through that. And that's in all the preparation. I mean, that's where you win or lose games. It's throughout the week in the preparation. It's not that day. It's not that Monday night. It's all the other stuff leading up to that. And we got to get there, you know. And that's still a work in progress. How we prepare each and every week. Now, Friday and Saturday's practice was better Friday than Saturday was better than Friday. You know, so it's just we're growing. Well, we still got a ways to go, and that's, you know, that's what we're working on. That's how you win football games. It's the preparation, the speed of the game. That's the one thing that's hard to simulate, and so that's why we got to go fast and hard. I know sometimes teams, you know, they don't hurt our starters, don't hurt, you know, these guys. You guys give us a look, but don't really hurt those guys. Well, I want our chase teams to go hard, wide open, and sometimes if you're hitting our guys, that's fine. That's football, right? We got pads on, we're just playing football. That's the way we coach our guys, and so we got to get better at that, and we have over the last two practices. But we got to continue to do that, and that'll be something that we have to develop over a period of time.
Scott, you guys have a question? Raise your hand if you bring the mic to you. Well, raise your hand.
Yeah.
What's concerned you the most about Notre Dame when you're looking at them?
I think just their overall size and speed. I mean, when you look at that, you know, it's what we look going back and looking at last year and some of these guys that are 6'4", 260, playing linebacker. I mean, that's pretty impressive of the size and speed that they have, because when you have that length, you can cover a lot of ground. I'm talking defensively. They're coached well. I mean, these guys are where they're supposed to be, and then they play hard and they're coached well. They've played in huge games, big games. Obviously just came off of, you know, the Final Four last year, and a team that was outstanding all year. And particularly when you look at, I think it was their Wake Forest game, their fourth game, when they made the change at quarterback and they brought the book kid in. I mean, their scoring went up the rest of the season after that point. I mean, so he's a threat, what he brings to the table. They have four starters back on offensive line that are solid up front, big guys that can move. You know, it's just a talented team. I mean, you know, Notre Dame, every year they go get the best players throughout the country. And, you know, so it's like whenever they do lose some guys, I mean, the next guys that are in are just as good. Coach Kelly and his staff have done an outstanding job. They've built great depth. You know, I think he may have been – he's one of the longest tenured guys there. And that's a tough job there. You just scrutinize everything that you do. He's withstood that with those naysayers throughout, you know, in the middle there. And done an outstanding job. So I think just the overall program, the way they play, offense, defense, kicking, there's really not a ton of weaknesses, I think, when you look at it, you know, because they can do so many different things on all facets. Yep. This week, I don't really have any worries this week. I think for us it's just about preparing the right way. This is our first game, so we're having to go through everything that we're going to do leading up to that first game, and including, like today, we're having a mock game where we're just basically a run-through of next Monday night. I mean, we got to go over pregame warm-up, where everybody stands, I mean, how we're going to warm up, when you come to the locker room, what you're going to do when you come to the locker room, halftime. I mean, like, there's so many things we got to go over, you know, and we're trying to prepare for everything, and, you know, and it's the first game. I mean, so – the new staff that we've brought in, they don't really understand what we're doing yet. Of course, all the players haven't done it yet. So those are the things that as a coach, you just want to be fully prepared for everything, and that's what we're trying to do, is get fully prepared and, you know, and to try to cover everything that we can, and that may come up on that next Monday night.
Yep. Back here. At what point did the magnitude or the reality of what you have here and taking over sink in with you, or – is it just sinking in now, especially with all the things that you just mentioned, all the logistics you just mentioned?
I mean, you know, it was the magnitude really sunk in the day that I came to the press conference. I mean, that's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, it was a lot of people out there, and, you know, it's not like Boone, North Carolina, where we had two reporters. You know, I mean, there was a lot of reporters there and a lot of people, and, you know, you're in ACC. I mean, it's big time. And so as soon as I got here, I mean, it was reality's hitting. Hey, it's go time now. And so we've just tried to do the best job we can do with what the hand that we're dealt, the guys that we've had, and what can we do to get these guys in position to make plays. And that's kind of what we've been focusing on, how much better can we get and all those things. Now, there's a short period of time between then, I knew it then, and Notre Dame. I mean, it's not a very long time to get ready for Notre Dame. And this season. I mean, it's a great schedule we have, one of the toughest schedules in the country. So we've done a good job of getting to this point right now. I know it's big. It's a big deal. And, we're anxious to get out and see where we're at and see kind of where we need to go from here.
Yeah, as a follow-up, how much did that change your approach compared to how you did things before? I mean, what things have you learned from this that you're applying now that you see kind of working now?
Well, we've really kind of stuck with what we've done just all along. I mean, I think you are who you are. I don't think you want to change anything that's gotten you to the point you've gotten in your career. If it's working before, it's going to work now. At the bottom line is, in this game of football, there's 11 guys on the field at all times. I mean, you can't have 12. There's 11 guys, and then how the different ways you can configure those 11 guys, there's only so many ways. So I think so many times people try to get – they get confused and they try to be, you know, do too much. Let's do what we do, and let's get good at it. And, so we've tried to stay, you know, exactly the way our plan of how we're going to get prepared and how we're going to get ready and not change that. I mean, we've got to – there's a process of how you prepare yourself to play, and we've got to do that. Now, you've got to put players on the field. Don't get me wrong. You got to have great players. This is a game full of great players, and – you have to have that if you want to be able to compete. But as coaches, we have who we have now, and the guys that are here, we got to put them in the best possible chances to make plays. A lot of teams can beat themselves. We don't want to do that.
Coach Scott, what areas in your team have you seen are you most confident in, and are there any guys who've sort of really impressed you by their performance in fall camp?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the receiver room, which we've talked about, I mean, I feel really good about five or six guys in that room, particularly Tutu Atwell. I think he could have a great year. I mean, he can play for anybody in the country. I mean, he's that kind of talent. He reminds me of the T.Y. Hilton that we had at FIU, who's with the Colts now. Very similar type player. And then I think with Seth Dawkins and Fitz out there, I mean, I feel pretty good about our receiving core. Guys have some – we have some good weapons out there. I feel good about our 1-0 line. You know, I think they're solid. They'll give us an opportunity there. And I think we have some depth at the running back position. I really do. I feel good about that. You know, I think linebackers, our inside backers, I feel good about that, the depth that we have there, the ones, twos, really four guys that are in that room, an inside linebacker room. You'd like to have a lot more depth at every other position. I think the one concerning thing is the depth, and we've talked about that. I mean, I really feel like there's a bit of a drop off between our starters and then our second team, and that's just because of, I think, several reasons. I think obviously when we got here, some guys left, you know, so that hurts your depth, and then we didn't have a chance to recruit like you'd like. By the time we got here in December, that hurts your depth. So I think that's probably the weakness there. You know, we got to stay healthy at every position. I think that's a critical factor. And then when you get a guy like Jordan Davis that can't play the first game, I mean, that hurts your depth right off the bat, you know, in the first game. So we got to continue to build our depth.
Coach, at this point, how happy are you with Juwan Pass's accuracy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been really good. I think he's had some days, a lot of days, where he's – and we chart every pass in practice where he's above 74%, 73%, right around – hovering in the 70s, which is outstanding. He's had some days where he's down around 50%. You know, we'd like for him to be in the at least 60, I think, in order to give us a chance to win. You know, we're going to take some shots down the field. So a lot of times, you know, when you're taking shots, you're not going to complete a big majority of those, but you are stretching the defense out. You're making them, hey, you better back up, you know, those type of things. But we got to be able to hit the intermediate short passes. We got to be a very high percentage in those. And he's done a good job with that. And I think, you know, there's times, man, he looks unbelievable, like really, really good. I mean, he's you know, big, tall, strong quarterback. When he stands in there and really follows through, I mean, he looks like you're supposed to look. There's times when his footwork's off and the ball sails on him. We got it, but he's gotten a lot better with that. I think he got an opportunity to really have a good season and play well for us.
As an overall QB, what do you think was his biggest strength that he improved on, and maybe his biggest weakness?
Yeah, I think the strength probably, and I don't know how much they tried to run him in the past, but he's, every time we've scrimmaged the defense, he's had some big runs, like really big runs, and has scored on the run most scrimmages. And so I think that's an added dimension that he's got to his game now, that he's embraced, you know, as before maybe felt like more, I have a pocket, you know, more of a quarterback than I'm going to sit in the pocket. But he's been able to expand our running game with the Q runs. I think that helps. You know, he's got a good arm. You know, the thing that he's worked on, I think, in the off season is the deep ball, to where he's given those guys an opportunity to make plays down the field, and that'll be huge, because they'll be, I mean, every game we're going to play, there's going to be guys running free in the back end. We got to be able to hit them. Every game we'll have it 100%. He's just got to be able to hit them, you know, because we talk about a guy running free and I overthrow him. We might as well just hand the ball off, right? I mean, that's a missed opportunity. So you got to drop the ball on there, give those guys a chance to make plays, and we got guys that can make plays. Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, one of their better players, I think, is number 42. I think, I don't know, he had close to 10 sacks last year. I mean, he is a speed guy off the edge. You got to know where he's at all times. And he can cause havoc. You know, he's more of a stand-up defensive end that's getting in the backfield. But then 53, their other end, he's solid. I mean, he's 6'4", 260, strong, good run stopper, but also can put pressure on the quarterback. So I think you got those two ends right there that cause a lot of problems for offenses. When you have those two defensive ends, then now you're going to put pressure on the quarterback. Now he's got to be able to step up, make a throw you don't want to make. I like number 11 for them, the safety. I mean, he's 5'11", 200. He's not really big, but, man, he's active. I mean, he's very active. He gets down in the run game and tries to, you know, he'll blitz him. He does a lot of things with what they do defensively. You know, and then their corner, number 5, Tony Pride, I think he's a very good corner. And they're not scared to play man. You know, we call it breathalyzer defense. I mean, they're right up in your face like this right here. I mean, so they can play that man-to-man, you know, and it makes it tough on those wideouts because they're getting their hands on them. We got to be able to get off that press coverage and make some plays down the field, you know, because I'm assuming they're going to try to load the box up, stop the run, and we're going to have some one-on-one matchups. So our guys are going to have to win. They're going to have to win those one-on-one matchups. And that, to me, it'll come down to a lot of that of what kind of plays can we make on the outside here with our wide receivers and you know, Juwan making those throws. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my first thought was they're not giving me enough time before we play this game. That was the first thought. I told Vince, I was like, man, you could have at least given a little bit more time. Start out with somebody else. I don't know. But that was the first thought. And then, you know, after that, I'm like, kind of put it out of my head, really. I mean, from that point forward, it was like, what can we do to get better as a team and not really worry about who we're playing? And we really, you know, really the last two practices, two and a half, we've kind of looked at going against these guys. But prior to that, it all have been about ourselves and how we can get better. You know, it's a big game. I mean, it's a huge – they're all big, though. I mean, for me, every single one of them are big. And the way we try to see it, we try to treat it in the same way at App. And, you know, all these years when we beat Michigan, you play Tennessee to overtime, Penn State. You know, you try to go out and do what you do. Play your game plan, whatever that is. You don't try to do something that you can't do. I think sometimes in games like this, sometimes players think they got to do a little bit more. You don't have to do a little bit more. You have to do what you do. You know, whatever you're coached to do and whatever your job is, just do that. Don't do anything more than that. And I think, you know, as a coach, that sometimes worries you about your players. They may try to step out and do a little too much. Just do what you're supposed to do, and then we'll be fine. That'll be good enough. And so, you know, that's how I'm approaching this game and every game, quite frankly. No, I watched the early in the game, but I was too late. I was asleep by then. But I did watch the whole Florida-Miami game. But, no, I saw it the next day, maybe on social media. I think I saw it on Twitter. Somebody was putting it out there. I forget who it was. And they had that one clip. So I clipped, you know, cut it on. I'm like, man, that's awesome. What that kid did was awesome. What he played. We're going to show the team from that clip today. You know, I think there's always opportunities to learn. I mean, I'm a football junkie, so I try to watch all these games. And, you know, and my wife says, how do you do that? Because you're watching football all day. Well, I just love it. I don't know. It's fun to me. And that, for me, that's entertaining. But at the same time, I'm trying to learn. So we're watching this Florida-Miami game, and I'm seeing all this poor tackling. I'm seeing sloppy play. And so, you know, whatever you can learn out of these games, to me, it helps us. Let's try to learn from them. But that was a great point in that game where that kid, the game's on the line, he did not quit. He's a D tackle and runs all the way down to the 2-yard line to win the game. It's incredible. And sometimes those plays go unnoticed because it could happen in the first quarter too. I've been a part of games where guys break off a big run, and all of a sudden we chase them down. We didn't quit. We tackle them inside the 10. We hold them to a field goal. We end up winning by 3 at the end, you know. We reinforce it every day. You know, we want to be an effort-based program. We want to play as hard as we can play every snap. And when we don't practice that way, we point it out every single day. And that, to me, that is how you prepare. If we're playing with not enough effort, lack of effort, that means we didn't prepare with effort. So it should be ingrained in our program. And that is something that we're harping on every single day. And we're not there yet. We're not where we need to be with that. We'll get better with it every single day. All right. Thank you, guys.
Well, there you have it. Louisville head coach Scott Satterfield, his press conference heard live here on ESPN Louisville. And we'll be throughout the season, courtesy of our friends at Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money. Plus, you can text ESPN to 502-212-3167 for a chance to win weekly Visa gift cards. A lot of great stuff in that press conference. Coach Satterfield picking Tutu Atwell as his breakout player of the year. He also named a starter, Puma Pass. He will get the start against Notre Dame next Monday. And also Jordan Davis, tight end, suspended for the first couple games of the season due to academic reasons. Well, coming up next right here on ESPN Louisville, 93.9 The Ville. That side will go to ESPN National Programming, ESPN 680-1057. We'll have the V Show next on the other side of this break. You are listening to ESPN Louisville.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 1057. Now here's Bobby V.
Well, he hasn't coached it down yet for the Louisville, but I like this Scott Satterfield. I like his demeanor at the press conference. He's just, he seems like a nice man. Again, we never really know what goes on behind closed doors, but he comes across as a nice guy. And I like it because, you know, I always talk about how football's its own animal. I realize that. But as somebody who had 5 jobs, all of which were rebuilding jobs, I went into places that the program needed to be rebuilt. I listen to what a guy says in a rebuilding situation, and I can either relate to it or I scratch my head a little bit. And everything he said is absolutely spot on. I mean, and I can relate to what he's talking about. I mean, he gets the, you know, everybody's excited when a new coach comes in because they all, if they guys who haven't left, everybody who stays says, well, we're going to show this guy, and he's going to, you know, he's going to love me. And then I'm going to play. And if you listen to what he was talking about, he calls them the chase team or something, but talking about the scout team, basically. And what happens is when you know, really get to that point now where you, even though they didn't release, you know, the depth chart yet, guys know kind of who's on the scout team and who's on the team that's going to be the main players. And all of a sudden, the guys who are not in that group think, oh, this guy's a jackass too. I mean, that's harsh. They don't necessarily think that. But there's a disappointment that goes into it because they were like, this guy was going to recognize my brilliance, and now he's not, and I'm not playing. And so what you do is that's what I call the moments of truth. When you're rebuilding a program, you have a series of moments of truth where You've got to be able to take that situation that faces you and make your point. And the point that they are trying to make here is, and he said it, he's been very careful not to throw any players or Petrino or anybody under the bus. But he said, just with very level toned, I don't know what went on here in the past, but the way we practiced, we had to let them know that's unacceptable. And that's what he's talking about, is the guys who were not, who were either they were here and they didn't practice that hard, or they weren't here, and so they're trying to acclimate themselves to what the framework is going to be, the atmosphere here, the work ethic, all of those intangible things which you can control. They're not predicated on talent. They're not predicated on anything other than setting the tone for your program. That's the moment of truth. And he said kind of that they had one last week. He got the guys on that chase team and said, look, I don't know, you know, this isn't going to work. You got to work harder than this. And that's where you find out, guys, do they buy in and say, yeah, okay, yeah, we get it, and they go and they work harder? Or do they say basically, well, you know, I was looking to play here, and now I'm not, you know, I'm not in the depth chart where I thought I'd be, and they're going to fight you. And some guys will do that. I mean, there will be some guys at the end of this year will find out, he will find out. I told you, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got, which I have when somebody has ever asked me, the handful of times they have, if somebody's taken over a coaching job that's a rebuilding situation, Tom Penders, who was at rebuilt programs everywhere he went. He coached at Columbia, then at Fordham, and then at Rhode Island, and then at Texas. And he said, when you are in a rebuilding mode, it's different if you inherited a team that won, you know, the guy left because they had a big monster year, and maybe you were on the staff and you just want to kind of keep it going. But if not, if you are in a situation where you're trying to rebuild, the first year, the single most important thing that you'll do, and it's hard for fans to want to understand this because they obviously want to win games, and the coach certainly wants to win games. He's wired to win games. But I believe he's right. The single most important thing you can do is find out which of the guys can play successfully for you. That's what you're trying to answer. Some of them may have the talent and not the mindset. Some of them may have the mindset and not the talent. Some may have neither. But you can, excuse me, you got to find the guys who can play for you. Who can play? Who can you? I hate to use that term, go to battle, because that's a little, you know, overused, and it's disrespectful to people who are really out there doing battle. But you know what I mean. Who can you go to the court with, go to the field with, and say, I can win with this guy? That's what you got to find out. And some of those things include, in fact, a lot of those things include the intangibles we just talked about. Is this guy going to work? Does he understand how hard we have to work? Does he understand the preparation? When Scott Satterfield was talking today, I couldn't help but think back, you know, I always like to read all these things. And one of my favorite books all time is now, what is it, 50 years old? I guess it is, 50 plus. It's when Vince Lombardi was coaching the Green Bay Packers. And one of his players, still alive, a guy named Jerry Kramer, Hall of Famer, wrote a book called Instant Replay. It was a diary of the season. And one of the things they talked about was in the locker room before the game. They were there very early. You know, kickoff was at 1. It was probably like 9 in the morning they were there. And or thereabouts, I guess they just had their pregame meal, so it might have been a little later than that. And it's quiet still. There's not a lot going on. And he was sitting at his locker, and Lombardi came in and looked at Kramer and said, yeah, you nervous? And he said, a little bit. He said, how about you, coach? And Lombardi said, nope. And he said, we were both being honest, because what Lombardi looked at was he reviewed everything, and he said, I prepared this team as best as I can prepare. There's nothing else I can do. I mean, in his book, especially then, the quarterback called the plays. He was like, I prepared them. I prepared them. I've given them everything that I can possibly give them. And now Kramer was nervous, because just because you've done that, he still has to go out and execute it. So he said they were being honest. And I think that's what he's trying to convey to them is, I'm not going to be able to do my job as well as I can do it unless you give me the kind of effort that we're demanding in practice, because then I have not prepared you as well as I can prepare you. If, you know, we haven't been able to get that done, if the scout team or the chase team, whatever he calls them, is not working as hard as they can work, we haven't prepared as well as we can. So, you know, that's everything he said, I was like, yep, I understand that. I get that. He's right. And I also, I don't want to be a naysayer, but I mean, you know, he's right. When CD asked him about the upset, that he was part of one of the biggest upsets, if not the biggest upset in modern college football, with his App State Michigan win. He said, can you take something from that and apply it to this? And he correctly said, well, it's a little different situation. I had my program in place there. You know, they were a successful team. They were being asked to play up in terms of the level they were playing against, but they had a winning atmosphere. All those things we just talked about, they had that work ethic in place. They had that. I'm sure he had guys on his scout team, his prep team, that were, you know, understood the work ethic he was preaching. All of those things were in place. So now, yes, you have to overcome perhaps a little bit of a talent gap, but, you know, you have a shot because you've got, you have good players and you've got a good system. All due respect, and I'm not smashing any of the kids here. We don't know what kind of players they have here. They may be very good. I'm not, but the point is, we don't know because we haven't seen them perform very well at this level. And, you know, and as for the system in place, he kept saying it nicely, not whining, not whiny, but he said, hell, the coaches are learning. The coaches don't even know yet. They're learning what we're trying to do. So the heck with the players, you know, but that's the way to go about it. And that's why I said I like what he says. He's not doing dangling a carrot on a stick in front of you to try and get you to buy into something. And, like, you know, I hate to bring it up, but last year, all this talk about Alabama and, oh, you know, it was all this bravado talk. And, you know, and in hindsight, it looks so silly right now. That's very important, especially when you're trying to build a program because you're trying to establish credibility. And, you know, he's walking that fine line between telling guys, listen, you know, we got a long way to go yet without making it sound like, well, I don't think you're any good as players. That's the, you got to work that fine line, which is, hey, I've got confidence in you guys. You know, let's go. Let's put the work in. We can do some good things. But at the same time, telling them this is not the level we need to be at here. And, you know, it reminds me, you know how I see this year and how I see about Notre Dame, and fans may not like it. I'm not doing it to be nasty or anything. They have very, very, as I always say, my favorite line, and I heard Nick quote it the other day. You know, do they have the best chance of beating Notre Dame that night, especially because they're the only ones playing them. So there's no question. They have the best chance. But do I think they have a realistic chance it would be a monumental upset? I mean, it absolutely would be. Yeah, and to make it worse, sometimes if you catch a game like this where the team's coming off a national semifinal last year, the playoff, and then they're in the middle of their season, they're between a couple of big games, maybe you catch it. This is an opener. Everybody is going to be sky high. So they're not going to come and get their B-list effort. I mean, Notre Dame's going to come out loaded for bear. So it's a really rough national TV opening game. They're going to get Notre Dame's best shot. It's going to be a very, very arduous task. But I used to have a friend who said when you played golf, and I've always thought this is pretty good. I don't know where he got it from. Maybe he made it up. I don't know. But he said he approaches golf as every hole's a par one. So what do you mean by that? He said, I just look at that shot. And that's that shot. If I hit a good shot, yay, I got a par one. And, you know, and nothing, what happened before and what happens after, don't concern yourself with. It may not be the most exciting way to look at this season, but that's what I look at. How many good moments can they have in this Notre Dame game? How many par ones can the players make? If there's a certain play, a certain throw that pass has to make, a certain defensive play that a guy steps up after last year's terrible defense and makes a play, that, you know, guy with a running play turns a no-yard gain, you know, into a 3 or 4 yard gain by doing what he was taught and executing, those kinds of things. It's not going to be enough probably to beat Notre Dame, but it's an opportunity where you can build on that and say, this is as good a team as there is in the country, and look at that play. That play, we handled that. We handled them. We executed this. We succeeded at that. That's the way you got to look at it. That's the opportunity. Usually, opportunity games, you say it's an opportunity to win the game, and you know, and certainly don't go out there with a defeatist attitude. I mean, you can't approach it that way, but I do think in the big picture, he's right. When he was talking, I could relate so much. I mean, he's talking about they don't even have a system where the guys, you know, if a new guy comes in and he's not sure how they're going to handle halftime, one of the old players, they don't even know that. They don't know how they're going to warm up. They got to go through all that stuff. I mean, I remember, it's so true. I remember when we took a new job, we would get to, you know, 2-3 weeks out or something and say, my God, we haven't even talked about, you know, what our pregame routine's going to be, what our halftime routine's going to be, what our timeout routine's going to be. I mean, all those logistics, and in football, I mean, I'm trying to navigate 12 guys in basketball. They're trying to navigate a small country in football. I mean, so, yeah, all of those things are just, they're not necessarily overwhelming, but they are important. They may not be the sexiest things to do. Oh my God, we're going to talk about how we're going to do our pregame warmups. Yippee! Fans will get excited about that. But if you don't get that culture in place, you won't build. And he's smart enough to know that. And so it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, I don't expect they're going to have a great year, but I'm going to be very interested to watch it as a guy, as an ex-coach, to see how this man builds, because I like what he says. I think he's a builder. I think he's a guy, if somebody was building your house, this is the guy you'd want. He's not going to skimp on the foundation. We had I won't mention his name because he's still in business, but we had a beautiful home. We mentioned where, because then it would tell you, you know, more information than I want to. So I'm not trying to embarrass the guy, but it looked really nice. Remember the movie? What was the movie that Michael Keaton was in, where the Japanese are coming in and they're going to take over the factory? And he was like a high school football hero, and you know, they have to prove to the Japanese that they can work as hard, because you know they are just all about work. Everything is work, 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 work. And you know, the idea is they both take something from each other's culture, but they had to make this seemingly impossible number of cars to prove to them that they would do it. And the last cars off the assembly line looked fine, but they weren't even like put together. Like, he was trying to show them how, you know, quality it was just like all the pieces were laying together, and he shuts the door and the whole thing falls into a million pieces. You know, that's what I'm saying. There are guys that can do that with a program, smoke and mirror. I don't think Scott Satterfield's one of those guys. I think if he's going to build you that. So we had a house that was like that a little bit. It looked great. Then we found out certain things were like not really nailed down. We found out that the guy had fallen through the ceiling trying to put in the ventilation system. I mean, it was that. So Scott's not going to build that house this way. He's going to build the foundation. It's going to be rock solid. And then eventually it's going to get built right. And you're going to look at it and say, yeah, you know what? This is a really nice home. That doesn't generally get done in a day or even a season. And so, you know, but it's going to be fun to watch him do it, because I like guys who do that. I can relate to that experience, and so it'd be fun for me to see. And I like his demeanor. So it was an interesting press conference. Straightforward guy, doesn't look, you know, seems grateful. I like that. Talked about how it's different. You know, he had two writers in Boone, North Carolina. He's grateful that he's in the ACC. I like guys, people who live their lives with a certain element of gratitude. It's fun to gravitate to those people. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting year for me, which, you know, is not one that's filled with high expectations, but I do think it's going to be a very interesting year. If you missed it, I know Nick mentioned this already, but Scott Satterfield's presser was presented by Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money. Text ESPN to 502-212-3167, and you'll get a chance to win weekly Visa gift cards. Those are tasty. At 1:30, Mark Stoops' presser will come up. We'll play that for you for the Kentucky fans. We'll talk about, well, anybody, actually, just if you're interested, we'll have that for you in just a little bit. We'll talk about that. We'll get into the Andrew Luck story, which is very, needless to say, very interesting on a lot of different levels. We can't even get a Colts guy to come on today because they are buried in everybody in the country demanding their time. So eventually we will, but may not be today. So, yeah, and the guy's texted me, Tutu Atwell equals T.Y. Hilton. He did say how much he thinks he's a terrific player. You know, that'll be interesting for me. He went out of his way to single him out and say he could play for any team in the country. And he talked about how they're going to take shots down the field, make no mistake, and guys are going to run free. He says he's very confident in his system. They'll have guys open, and Juwan Pass is a work in progress, but he seems to be pleased with his effort going forward. He very cavalierly just mentioned that he's going to be the starter, I guess, in his mind. Whether it was not being disingenuous or not, some people would say, what took him so long? I think because of the injury situation, and I think that it's just kind of been a foregone conclusion to people around the team. So I guess he didn't think it was necessary to make a big, you know, hullabaloo about it. I don't know, but he is going to start, and we'll see how that plays out. So it's going to be an interesting year. It's certainly not going to go down, I think, as one of their most successful years in the win column. If it is, the guy should be the coach of the century, let alone coach of the year. But I think it's going to be very interesting, and I'm encouraged. It's going to be fun fun to watch them try and build this. I really admire the guy's approach, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But fans are going to have to be patient. I mean, you talk about letting the cake bake. We got to let the factory get the mix in the box with this team first. Let them get it to the supermarket first. Let them get it in the box. Let them get it to the supermarket. Then you still got to pick up some eggs and milk and stuff, and then you can get home and prepare it and then get it in the oven. They're not even close to getting the thing in the oven yet. But eventually we'll let it bake, and it's going to be a tasty cake indeed.
I could go for some cake.
Yeah, cake is good. We are going to get some Mill and Tony's today. It's Mill and Tony Monday. It's not here today. It's the exact same read twice. Oh, ho, ho, look at that underneath. There it is. It's Mill and Tony Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Vuvuzelas. We need vuvuzelas for Mill and Tony Monday.
Isn't it more like South Africa?
They used to have them all the time at sporting events in New York till they banned them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Baseball games.
I thought it was the
Everybody
World
had
Cup.
Them. No, that's where they became the most annoying phenomenon in history. But they used to have them at all the games in New York. I mean, everything. Not just, I mean, there was no soccer. Nobody cared about it. There was no soccer.
Well, I remember those.
But they had them at baseball games, had them.
They had them at River Frogs games. And then they eventually said,
please leave those home. You're just annoying the crap out of all of us. Please, I
didn't know that's what they were shaped like.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big plastic.
Yeah, I had like four of these as a kid.
That's what they. You can't play anything on them. It's just one tone. You've got to, you blow it like a. You got to do it like a trumpet guy.
Right.
I think. Yeah. But don't you? I imagine maybe if you're a professional trumpeteer, you might be able to get some different tones out of it. But for the most part. That's it. Oh, my God.
This is a video of Vuvuzela for 10 hours. The 10-hour loop of Vuvuzela.
Oh, what? To try and get information on the political prisoners or what?
I mean, I guess so.
Wow. Well, we're not politically prisoning anybody. We're offering wonderful Mill and Tony, or at least we're offering you the opportunity to share in some that we'll be having today. Mill and Tony Monday. Yaya and the Mill and Tony family are going to drop off some tasty pasta Mill and Tony. They have a $5.99 lunch special until 2 p.m. each day with things like manicotti and baked ziti. Mill and Tony's catered the Kentuckiana Friends V-Night of Hope and Inspiration, and it was damn tasty. Yaya's donating a portion of wine sales to the Kentuckiana Friends of V as well. So go have a nice meal, get some wine, and you'll be helping the fight against cancer. There's happy hour and drink specials going on. $25 for a whole bottle of wine, $1 off wine and beer during happy hour, which runs from 2 to 5 p.m. each day. They have delicious homemade sangria and a new Italian punch, their own creation, which is darn refreshing on a cold day, on a warm day, rather. Today's not the best day for that, but nasty weather outside, but that's all the more reason to go inside and get yourself a nice hot plate of delicious Mill and Tony's pasta.
That would be great pasta Mill and Tony on a gross day for lunch.
Yep, yep, yep. Two great locations, one on 1600 South Hurstburn Parkway, right off the 64 East exit, also a brand new location at 1008 Commerce Boulevard in Pottstown. Tell them ESPN sent you for free garlic cheesy bread. Thanks to Yaya and all the folks at Mill and Tony.
I feel like that was kind of more for what you were going for. Vuvuzela.
No, guys used to do just what they did at the World Cup. The only difference was, I don't know, there may be 20 of them in the stadium instead of 10,000 of them. So you'd hear them in isolated parts of the stadium. And one guy do it, and then the other 10 guys would join in, and you'd hear in the background,
there was a, when I lived at the Bellamy, it was the apartments all, there's a courtyard right in the middle of all the apartments. And the guy like directly across from me had a vuvuzela and was playing it at like 2 a.m. And it was echoing throughout the courtyard to all the surrounding apartments. I think someone threw a bottle of Jack Daniels through his window.
Wow. Sad. We got a commercial break, don't we? I think we have to pay some bills, and we have to let the FCC know who we are and where we are. And
we probably should do that. Can you do a read before that, though? Because that'll give me time to load something up.
I'll read this. ESPN memorandum. No, they don't want that. I don't think we want that. How about this? I will read from last year's football prediction guide.
Ooh, those should be out soon, the new ones.
But Penn these are from Station last and Kroger. Year. These are from when Andrew Luck was still a football player.
Ah.
Oh, it's so funny. This is not only funny, I was obviously being sarcastic. You wanted me to do a commercial read, but I picked this up, and here's football talk. Big picture of Andrew Luck, and it says, talking to Peter King of Sports Illustrated, I feel awesome. I really do. I'm in a great place.
No.
It's been a long
that is sad.
It's been a long journey to this point, but and it will be a long journey until we get done. We need to get done in Indianapolis. But, and he was quoted, wasn't it? Was it Schefter who had the tweet of him saying that last year he turned to Frank Reich and said, "I can't. Can you pinch me? I can't believe I'm having this much fun."
Yeah, that's true. He was.
We'll get into that a little bit. I've got some thoughts on that.
He,
like
he was great
else.
Last year too.
Yeah, but I you know what? Think about this. I mean, you'll see where I'm going with this when I plant the seed. If you got a cold, you know, you've had a cold and you're pissed off because you know it's been like 9-10 days and you just can't shake the thing, you know, and you're so mad that you just can't shake it. And yet people don't understand why this guy might want to walk away. For the last 4 years, basically all he's done is pee blood. He's had lungs punctured. He's had ribs broken. He had shoulder injury that he went to Europe to try and get new treatment on. Every day you wake up and you say to yourself, you know, well, what calamity befalls me today? Every day. Take that cold, magnify it 500-fold, and have it go on for 4 straight years. And you could say to yourself, let me see, I can make that go away if I just don't play this game anymore. How much money do I have in the bank? I think maybe I'll step away. We'll talk about what the Colts did with the salary cap and his bonus, by the way. That's an interesting thing. That's why we do want to get some guests on about this. We'll talk about that as well. Stick around. Glad you're with us here. It's the V Show on ESPN 680-1057.
Napa Know How.
At Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, get a $25 prepaid Visa card when you get any Napa automotive battery. It's the best deal for some of the best batteries from some of the best car people around. But we might be a little partial. Anywho, pick up any Napa automotive battery and save $25. Do it yourself or have it done for you. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, while supplies last, offer ends 8/31/19.
NFL Game Pass is back.
Let's go!
See all of the out-of-market preseason games live on your device.
This guy is getting it done.
All the rookies.
Here's Murray taking off.
All the hype.
I've never seen speed like that.
All the hope.
This dude right here is the best we've seen.
All the football you can handle, all in one place.
Better get your popcorn ready.
NFL Game Pass. Start your free trial today at NFL.com/Game Pass.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
You're locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Stop it.
It's a rainy day. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down. They don't really, though. Sometimes I like a nice rainy day. See, that's the problem. There's a song, Rainy Days and Mondays Always Get Me Down, and then Eddie Rabbit, I Love a Rainy Night. It'll make your mind. It's like the Beatles saying, Can't Buy Me Love, but then saying money. That's what I want. Well, make your mind up. What are you doing? I mean, you want money, you don't want money. What are you doing here? I don't know how to get on board with you because I don't know what you're saying. You want money, you don't care about money. I mean, you got to pick a side.
These freaking confused limeys, am I right?
I mean, they don't know. You know, you're just trying to cater to everybody. You can't do that. That's another song they sang. That was another Beatles song. You can't do that.
That was organic. That was.
I didn't get that charger. Please come and have it. But now I'm really mad that I won't have it anymore. It's a good charger.
Don't derail that. I think it's actually my charger.
No, it's not. I purchased this. Dude. Wrong. You are wrong. Now you're not going to get it unless you admit that I bought it. So I remember where I bought it. So
Can you at least grant me that I probably have the same type of charger?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't keep track of your chargers. I just know I bought this because I loved it. It had the adapter on it, so I could use it for an iPhone or a...
Oh, no, I don't have one of those.
My own fault. I kept it in the phone, figuring, rather than keep it on the cord. This way, if I ran into somebody who just had an iPhone charger, which is much easier to
access... It's actually not a terrible idea.
So I will always have it, but then, unfortunately, it fell out of the phone. It's a dongle. That's what they call it.
This sounds dirty.
By the way, speaking of dongling,
what were you saying?
Barty is dongling right now. The number two seed in the U.S. Open lost her opening set 6-1. She's the number two seed. She lost the first set 6-1, and the second set
Barty?
She's from Australia.
I don't know her first name.
Her name is Ms. Barty. She's the number two seed. You should know who she is. I should know who she is.
I wasn't saying that, like, you know,
no, I don't
snarky.
Know
I just, I,
oh, look,
I
just went to look on my phone to see what her name is, because I don't know, and I should, and I apologize to you. Amanda, how about, what would it be? Ashley, I knew it was an A. Ashley Barty from Australia.
There you go.
It's 3-3 in the second set. She lost the first set 6-1. The number two seed could be out in week one. I wonder what happens. If you're the two seed, you must have booked a hotel or a room for a lot longer than one night.
Maybe a nice Airbnb.
What do they? I don't test play with that kind of money. She ain't staying at an Airbnb.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe like if you're an unranked player, but if you're the number two seed, you probably got a nice place.
You should get some nice Airbnbs.
I would find somebody, you know what? I should be the one to write that book. That would be a fascinating book of what I call the mundane side of the glamour of sports. In other words, like seriously, how do the Yankees get paid? I would really like to know that. I would like to know. This is like we want to know Wednesday on steroids. Like, does a guy come in, you know, like on a Friday, the stack of envelopes, Judge, Stanton, is Stanton here? No, he's in the Walpole. It's checks right here. I'll take it. All right, fine. Give it to Austin Roma. Give it to him, Austin. I mean, what are you doing? I thought you wanted the charger.
I don't know who that is. Let me use it.
All right. Well.
It was here during the video.
All right, well, there you go. Say on the air.
I have PJ's charger.
You have PJ's charger. Why would the whole world want to know that?
Because maybe he's listening.
Okay, PJ, if you're listening, Nick's got your charger. Is that from the place from Dave and Buster's Friday? Is that why? Why do you have his charger?
No, from earlier today.
Oh. Now, thanks, everybody, by the way. I brought shoes by to Dave and Buster's to help Robbie Spear with the sports reach. That was a nice, nice thing. We filled that box, and we had a nice time out there. Thanks to Dave and Buster's for hosting us. Thanks to Mike Pratt for coming out there and being with us as he usually is on Fast Break Friday. And to the people who came by, we got a cash donation. They gave him $500 to go buy shoes. That was extremely nice. And then anonymously, they asked that be done. And then we got a whole box of shoes. So thank you for that. No, but seriously, wouldn't that be every time I brought this up, I have been fascinated by things. There was a guy who was the National League president. His name was Chubb Feeney, and his daughter, again, I want to say Kathy, started with a K, became a big deal with Major League Baseball, which is fine. I mean, you know, you grow up around the sport, you know what the hell's going on. So that makes sense. And I said, do you ever wonder how they put together the schedule for Major League Baseball? You know, I mean, how do they do that? What the logistics of that? And I figured I would like, I was kind of like thinking I'd like to interview the guy who put the computer program together or something. I found out, and this was true, and now this was true, it's been about 10 years, so maybe it's changed. I don't even know if she's still in the front office for Major League Baseball. But they did it with old pencil and paper. They had like a big conference table. All the teams, And then they would start. They didn't start from scratch. They would take like corresponding dates from the year before and they pencil them in. And teams would call them and send them, listen, you can't book it on these days because the stadium's in use for whatever it would be. I don't know. I don't know who gets first dibs, football or whatever it may be. But they would have all that and they'd pencil it all in. And then they would go and do it by hand. Could you fathom a 162 game schedule for 30 teams doing it by hand with pencil and paper? I am just amazed at that.
That sounds arduous.
So, like, I want to know, not just sports, like, who prints those gigantic billboards? The ones that you still had paper. Now most of them are electronic. But, like, where is that? Is there just a gigantic printing press somewhere? I mean, I would be fascinated to know all this stuff. So I would like to know that. Like, how do the run-of-the-mill tennis players travel? How does the elite travel? Like, Roger Federer, I'm going to guess, does not travel the same way the guy who's ranked 200th in the world does. I mean, and I'd like That's to go fair. Talk to people who did it years ago. Like, I remember reading the book about golfers. They would, you know, if you were Arnold or Jack or whatever, you could fly in your own private plane. But the rest of them shared cars. They shared hotel rooms. They would go and, you know, you had to save a nickel or dime wherever you could, because if not, you were going broke. A guy says to me, NFL players get 16 checks. That's what I mean. How do they get them, though? They get mailed to their house? Does a guy come in? I can't imagine, with all the people on the roster, a guy comes in and just, do they have mailboxes there? I think it's fascinating. I think that would be a fascinating feature. How do they do it?
We can make it.
Well, no, you got to have access to things. I mean, that was one, no
just
disrespect.
Follow people around.
But that was one of the advantages when I was doing the show at the network, is we could call people. Listen, do you know somebody in the commissioner's office? Yeah, can you call and see if they would talk to us about this? Yeah, sure. And they would. And that's how I found out they did the whole thing with pencil and paper. I still can't get over that. I don't think she's still in the office.
We might be an O&O, but I mean, we still got those four magic letters.
We're not owned by the network. O&O means it's owned by the national company. There's only about four of them. New York is, Chicago is.
L.A.?
I think L.A. is, and Dallas might be. They might have been. You don't make money doing O&Os. I mean, they do in those markets because they're so big, and they have the rights to, you know, the big NBA and NFL Major League Baseball teams, but mostly you make your money by...
I was using that term wrong.
Yes, you have been.
For a long time.
Katie Feeney, not only, this is sad, I don't mean to be disrespectful, not only does no longer works in Major League Baseball, she passed away. I did not realize that. She worked in Major League Baseball for four decades. Daughter of former National League President Chubb Feeney passed away a couple of years ago at the age of 68. That's sadly very short. But anyway, that's amazing that they used to do it with pencil and paper. I can't. She was... as I said, the daughter of the former commissioner. But I just think that would be a fascinating book. I would do chapters. How do the teams get paid? How do the individual, you know, when you're an individual sports star, how do you travel? How do, a whole bunch of things. You could get ideas from people that, you know, when you watch, you say, I wonder how they did that. How do they do that? You know, then you put it in a book. The guy says, if the NFL didn't offer direct deposit, I think that would be fascinating. I'm telling you. Now, again, it's 10, 12 years when I first broached this. But at that time, they had checks. They cut checks. And you remember, I don't know, I guess, do you have to get direct deposit? I don't know. Federer has a private jet. Low-ranked players sleep four to a hotel room. See, that's what I mean. I'm telling you. And not only that, like, you know, if you're a baseball player or something, you have a schedule. You know, I'm going to Seattle. I'm playing three games. I'm leaving. Whatever it may be, a team sport. They don't know. This event is a two-week event. You could be there for 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 hours. And if you're Barty, the number two seed, I'm quite certain you think you're going to be there more than one day. She gets bounced today. What did she forfeit the rest of her room? I mean, that's...
Maybe she sells it to, I don't know, Venus Williams or something.
Everybody's texting me direct deposit. Maybe it is. I guess maybe it is. I don't know. I'd like to find that out, and I'd like to know when that started. I want answers to all these things. How about the rest of the people? Everybody's on direct deposit? Like, how many people work for the Yankees? How many people work for the Reds? You know, all those people, I guess they would be all direct deposit. I don't know.
That would be, like, public knowledge, right? I mean, you could get, like, record. Well, couldn't you get, like, a record request?
They're not publicly traded. These are privately held companies. They don't have to tell you squat.
Hmm.
So, interesting. To me, the business of sports, the logistics of it, the mundane, not the big business like, you know, the TV contract, what's the viability going forward of the ACC network from a profit standpoint. That's interesting, too, but that's a different level. This would just be like a book that you could, you know, I hate to say it, it'd be a great bathroom book. You know, in little spurts, you could read a chapter and say, hey, look what I found out today. I found out how they, I don't know. Like, for example, you know, did you know, I think they still do this. Baseball fans will know this. All the baseballs are rubbed before the game with a mud that only comes from one place. It all comes from the riverbed of the Delaware River.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Now,
didn't
why?
Did someone text that in to We Want to Know Wednesday?
They should.
That might have been a fact that you dropped them.
That's fascinating to me. Why did they pick this river? Or maybe they just looked at it and said, listen, we could have picked any river, but we want uniformity with the balls. And that was, you know, somewhat near the Major League offices in New York City. So, you know, we thought we'd do that. That's, those kinds of things are very interesting. Has that changed? Baseball rubbing mud. That's what it's called. It comes in a package.
Can you buy it yourself?
It's used to treat in the sport of baseball. Baseballs were rubbed in a mixture of water and infield soil, but this method usually discolored the balls. So it's near, in 1938, Lena Blackburn, man named Lena, was third base coach for the Philadelphia Athletics. And so he went in search of a better mud to rub against the balls. He discovered the rubbing mud's location somewhere near Palmyra, New Jersey, and founded the company that he used to sell it. It was used by every major league team along with some minor league and college teams. So I guess I don't know who does it right now. The company only brought in about $20,000 a year at the time. Back in the early 2000s, so they couldn't even operate it as a full-time job.
Now how much is the mud business?
The mud originates from the New Jersey side of the Delaware River. The mud is cleaned and screened before its use. Each year, Jim Bintliff, who's running the company right now,
that's a great name,
visits the mud source, chats with the mud, asks it how it's doing, asks about the family, returns with 1,000 pounds of it to store over the winter and sells it the following baseball season. Harvests mud. The man's job is to harvest mud.
But they said the thing that stood out to me in there was they clean the mud.
Yes, that's imagine? Clean the mud.
If ever
there was a job for your mother, that's it. That she would love that. Probably she'd make
it's
it
the cleanest
clean.
Damn mud.
The cleanest mud in the world. Quality. Let's see some comments.
Couple really
from
good texts coming down here. PGA Tour does direct deposit. I bet Rory's looks pretty good today. 15 mil.
I got in Locke's golf thing. Well, I'm gloating because I'm in. Look who's in first place. What is it? Uninformed
soccer. Uninformed football.
That's two
league.
Weeks now, and Entz has dropped to third. He dropped down a spot. He's now in third place. So, and Nick, by the way, gave everybody a 1 week head start. You had the fifth highest
nice
point total in last week, so you may be competitive here soon. But I'm in
got a lot of ground to make up.
First place, Entz. You want some tips? I'll be happy to give them to you. Maybe I can help
Pepe.
You.
Pepe, definitely draft Pepe.
Oh. Salah got me some.
By the way,
some points. I wanted to finish this thought. So to that end, I also got in the first time Locke's Golf Fantasy League.
Yeah,
which was, by the way, when we do golf fantasy for our majors, it's so nice and simple. Pick three golfers; they all make the cut. You're in. They don't. Any of them miss the cut, you're out. Combine their score; best score wins. This league. It's as if two guys got together and said, let's try and come up with the most contrived, convoluted scoring system we possibly can, and let's have Valvano get in that one as his first league. Oh, my God. First of all, the event itself.
Baptism by fire, man.
They gave people a head start this year, the first time, which I liked. It's the first time I liked that the golf did that. You know, by your seed, you started under par. The FedEx Championship started guys at a certain number under par based on their standings. So,
how the hell did...
How the hell what? So well, Rory was not seeded number one, so he had to come by, and which made it entertaining.
No, I know, but there were a couple. Didn't Justin Thomas, wasn't he like 15 under or something like that? Or did I miss?
No, he was. Well, for the tournament, that's well. Keep in mind that some of these guys got a head start. I think some of them started at 10 under.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like how do you blow a 10-shot lead?
Well, not everybody else starts at even.
It
was graduated. It was a curve. They were grading on a curve. I thought it made sense.
That's been my biggest problem
with NASCAR. When you get to the playoffs, and the last week there's only four guys who can win, but there's still 36 other guys on the track. How is that a legitimate race? I mean, if I'm one of those other 36 guys, I'm getting the hell out of the way, or I'm going to expect to basically get punched in the neck when I get back to the garage.
Well, they did, but they were also racing for something, which I thought was a good idea by NASCAR.
Because they're racing for money.
Well, it was like $1 million or something like that.
What, if you win that particular race?
Well, if you win basically like the backup cup or whatever, like the guys that aren't in the chase. If you win that thing, you get like $1 million or a pretty decent sizable paycheck. So it was basically giving them something to race for, too. So they weren't just out there, you know, like, hey, Tony, watch me do a donut in turn three. It'll be freaking hilarious. Like, it wasn't, you know.
I don't know. That NASCAR, unfortunately, has been fortunately for them, has been smart enough to know that the luster is off their product. Believe me, they were kicking ass for a long stretch.
Well, the story, I remember, and the story was they were the new fourth sport in the Big Four. They had surpassed hockey in the national landscape. And then I remember a story saying that, oh, maybe it was the start of the decline. And there were all these, it was in ESPN Magazine, there were all these ideas to try to revamp the sport.
You know, they went to, it's like watching a race. And I've always said the same thing. A guy's literally, you know, quarter of a mile ahead of everybody else. Some guy who's in 30th place cuts a tire, it flies across the track, they have to put a yellow flag on, and that whole league goes away. It would be like playing a basketball game, and I have a 15-point lead, and the ninth player on the other team comes in and turns an ankle. Oh, we got to stop the game. By the way, when we start again, you're only ahead by one. I would be like, well, how does that make sense? So the people, there was no urgency to watch the first part of the race, so they tried to do it in stages, which is okay, but I'm not sure it's compelling, and the playoff was a hell of an idea. But the same thing, you got four guys at the end, and I don't know. I feel like they should race after the last race. The guys who are 1, 2, 3, 4 should go out and have a shootout for the season championship.
That'd be kind of cool.
I don't know. It's that would be too gimmicky, I guess. But
a little bit. That's like why people don't like the shootout.
Justin Thomas started at -10.
Yeah, I was just about to say. I saw that text.
So here's one. Jared Lorenzen, the late Jared Lorenzen, told a story once that when he was with the Giants, the check stub was left in the lockers. The funny part was one day Michael Strahan switched his check out with Jared. He about had a heart attack. They were direct deposit. Listen, somebody said if they don't use direct deposit, that would be a fascinating story. Well, that's what I'd like to find out. Are there any pro sports? We don't have direct deposit here, which probably baffles you. So I don't know. Do all of them? Does MLS have direct deposit? I don't know. I'd be curious about all that stuff. Here's somebody at my hotel. I don't know what that meant. I don't know what that.
Oh, that's the tennis player.
Here's at my hotel. Oh, did he send us a picture or something? Oh, the picture didn't come through. Okay. Well, there you go. That's what I mean. I'm curious.
For the Western Southern Open.
Yeah, I didn't go again this year, and I'm mad because it's really a hell of an event. They get a great
Rockland
field.
You did the show from up there.
Yeah, very nice. Barty, by the way, Ashley Barty has come back to win the second set against this unseeded player in the opening round, so maybe she will not have to check out of her room just yet.
Diaz from Kazakhstan.
Yes.
Coming up 1:30, by the way, we will replay.
We're not going to replay. We're going to play. We haven't played it yet.
Well, yeah, okay, fine. But it already happened.
Yes.
So isn't technically a replay?
No. Just want to air it. Replay is something you've already had on the air. We're going to play on tape. We're going to play
the replay.
No, it's not a replay because we haven't aired it yet.
Okay.
It's going to be aired. It would be, you know, it would be like if you go to the movies, you're not seeing a replay of the movie just because it's already been made. You're going to, it's a replay if it's been on your airwaves once before. We've never played. This press conference with Mark Stoops has never aired on any of our stations.
That's
never
fair.
So it would not be a replay. It's the premiere of the Mark Stoops press conference.
Ah, okay. I kind of like
that.
If
we were to play Scott Satterfield again, then it would clearly be
a replay.
A replay.
Can we do that? I think I might have like movie magic majesty.
Do you want to make
music like
I don't think that's fair. We didn't do that for Satterfield.
But his was live.
Doesn't
and uncut.
Matter. All the more reason. Live. The people get excited about that. Live. Coming to you live. You are listening live to Scott Satterfield.
Shit, not like Saturday Night Live. Have Patty Ice as he's walking up to the podium. I love that idea.
Yeah, he does like one of their opening skits where he's just saying goofy stuff and, you know, I don't think I've got a stomachache. I probably shouldn't have eaten that tuna, but And maybe I'll feel better because it's live Monday afternoon.
I forgot where they do the press conference from. I'm drawing a blank. On
the complex. On, somewhere,
yeah,
the
I know. I just don't know where. Kenny Klein was kind of funny because
Kenny Klein was funny? I mean, he is funny. No, but yeah, why he's a funny usually guy. Usually he's very serious.
I know. But before the press conference, I have it in my ear.
And what was he doing?
And he was just talking about like.
Was he doing knock knock jokes again to us?
He was talking about like the food that they had, like the catering.
For lunch?
For lunch there.
They cater the football press conference lunch.
I think so.
No.
Or maybe they feed
the media to cover a guy talking for a half an hour? Seriously?
Well, maybe they were talking about like the game day stuff. I don't know. I came in a little late.
There's no way they do that.
But it turned into discussion of like funnel cake and carnival foods, and it got some decent laughs from everybody. He was working the room, man.
No, Kenny's a charming man and got a darn good sense of humor.
As they say, best in the business.
And loves Jimmy Buffett, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's seen Buffett I don't know how many times. Let's see. This one, talking about Satterfield's comments. And a guy says, because I was saying that I thought, I really liked the way he said, never played organized sports, never coached, but I like what Satterfield said. At this point, the operative word for all programs, especially here, is if. If talent is better than they've shown before, I say what you will, and last year was a train wreck on so many different levels, but it's very, very difficult for me to look at what transpired at the end of last year and think that was just all about the fact that the coaches quit on them and they quit on the coaches. There had to be a dearth of talent of some sort also. I mean, there had to be.
It's a dearth.
It's the opposite of a abundance.
Oh, okay. So a lack thereof.
Yes.
Fair. That's not exactly...
The word dearth.
That's not what I was thinking.
A scarcity or lack scarcity. Of something. Today's word is dearth.
I thought... I'm glad...
Lack, scarcity, shortage, shortfall, want, deficiency, insufficiency, meagerness, destitution, scantiness.
Oh.
Scantiness. Scant.
Huh. Just that's not what I heard the first time, but I'm glad.
DS from Kazakhstan is starting to
choke.
Yeah.
Well, no, you have a very specific definition for what a choke is. So how do you know she's actually choking?
Well,
Did she change up her game plan?
Yes, she was ripping winners all over the court at the start, and now Barty hit a shot. She just tried a ill-advised low percentage drop shot, put it in the net, and now she's down love 15 on her serve, and. I think the moment is getting to her. She's looked up and suddenly realized, holy crap, I'm going to have to find another hotel room because I'm sure she's checked out after today. But I may beat the number two player in this tournament here.
What if as she was leaving for the tournament, the hotel staff had already checked her out?
Like, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't check out. Yeah, well, yeah. We like to be ahead of the game here.
We're going to need that room.
I looked on Bet Online, and you're minus 1,700, so... Felt pretty good.
Poor Diaz.
Yeah, she's down love 30. Barty got a wake-up call. Well, that's Australia. Playing in the middle of the night.
I'm glad I asked you, dearth, because I'd like to think I've got a solid vernacular.
I like to use the words.
I like to talk and stuff. It's fun with the words and the whatnot. But the dearth, when you said that, I thought it was actually like there was talent there, but it just hadn't been cultivated.
No.
Like that's what I thought you meant.
Dearth is. I mean, when you look at the scores at the end of last year, it's very hard to think.
But they weren't trying. I'm not saying that. There is a ton of talent.
That's the hope that people have. The hope is that they just so badly quit on last year that they're five levels above that. And I believe me, no one would be happier about that than I. I just think that that's unlikely. That's why I'm telling you this year. And people are. I can see people. You know, people, casual fans. Not everybody, so calm down. I'm not painting with a broad brush. Just want to be entertained with winning teams. That's all they care. They want to just go and pay their money and see their team win. And you know, especially, not necessarily, like I hate to say it, like the Bats, because the Bats are minor league team. And she tried it again. She tried another drop shot and hit it out. Now she's down love 40.
What are you doing, Diaz?
You know, but like Louisville or Kentucky or something like that. Yeah, I mean, they want to... You pay your money, and I want to win. Damn it, I demand winners. And so if there's not that big a chance they're going to have a winning season this year, and I don't believe there's you know, huge chance for that, then people are going to tune out. And that's a shame. I think it's your loss. I think it's all part of the movie. It's like, well, the end of the movie is way better. If somebody told you I saw that movie, the end of it's way better. The beginning's okay, but the end of it's way better. I don't think you'd say, I'll show up halfway through it. You know, this way, just after the ending. You watch the whole story. This is part of the story, how he's going to build the
makes
program,
the
how
ending
he's going. Exactly.
All the more rewarding.
Exactly. And the other
it's
thing
a
is.
Build. It's a build. It's like the trilogy.
Because everything gets wrapped into UK, U of L, and, you know, you're mad if they win three games that Tommy at the water cooler is going to be breaking your balls again, and that's all you care about. And I couldn't care, literally, it would be impossible for me to care less about that, then it doesn't faze me. So, but that's your business. So, but I mean, so for, I'm just interested in the story. This is going to be a fascinating story. That program fell so quickly and so mightily, you almost could hear an audible thud. And for this guy to come in, how's he going to do it? You know, it's going to be and to watch how they were part of doing it at App State, I love everything he said so far. I think it's going to be a really interesting story. Guys said, given today's salaries, players might be getting multi-million dollar checks. Can you see dropping that off for a deposit at the drive-thru? Yes, I think that would be awesome. I absolutely would love to, if there's a guy not getting paid direct deposit, if you would let me go to the bank with him and stick that in the drive. Why? I hate to be disrespectful, but who cares? Why not? You could put it in there. It's not like, you know, it's the same thing for a $100 check. The same principle. If you call the bank the next day and they don't have it, you can stop payment on it. It's not like somebody's going to all of a sudden Mickey, the teller, is now calling you from his, you know, beach home in Belize. Wonder how Mickey did that. Well, he took a drive-thru from Michael Strahan. They confused him with Michael Strahan. Mickey, 5'8", short, white, Jewish guy. They confused with the guy who's national TV, you know, gigantic African-American with the space between his teeth. That was the guy, you couldn't see the differentiation there. Really? They didn't pick that up? You know what? Keep the money, Mickey. How you pulled that off, I don't know. If I'm Strahan, I say, got to tip my hat to you, dude. That's awesome. And now have it. Really, you need how you pulled that off is amazing to me. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. You'll hear from Coach Stoops. We'll talk about Andrew Luck. We haven't got into that, and that could have been a topic to carry a whole show, basically. And then we'll do a V Stakes in the last hour. It's not raining, I don't think, in the Northeast. So hopefully they'll have a good track to run on there or down in Florida. Genesis is not racing today. Thank you. Genesis is not racing. But if they were racing, they would have the best diamonds at the best prices. And the reason that I have to not let them race with me right now is because that gigantic 20% off sale that we were supposed to read ended. So I would be reading old copy. It would be like saying Christmas is right around the corner, or hey, Valentine's Day is in a week. Those things are all passe. We need new copy.
So that read would be a replay?